Get the best odds on all the big games this March. Download the Circa Sports Iowa app today.
It is Sunday, June 14th. You're probably listening on Monday, June 15th. Welcome to the Williams and Bloom Quarantine Podcast. That was a drum roll. What, 13?
Week 13?
I don't know. 14.
14, 15. It's about the three-month mark.
Yeah. I actually, we got out, this was the second weekend of the in a row that the family got out of town, and it felt normal. We went down to Clarinda. Now, I must say, the places we've ventured off to, down in Decatur County.
Yep.
You ever been there?
I have. Leon.
Yep. And then Page County. I mean, not exactly... let's just say the folks down there aren't exactly too fearful of COVID. I'll put it that way.
Well,
I mean, because they're so spaced out. Like, yeah. It's now they don't want riffraff like us
coming down to their.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, no.
Stay out.
Don't come down here.
Yep. No, there is something, too, not to say, because I followed some of the counties down there, and I know Taylor County has had a decent number of people that have. Had the virus.
There's an outbreak in Taylor County.
They're not immune from the thing, but they would be in a different situation than the folks here in Des Moines.
Yeah. Well, I told my mom and dad a couple months ago, don't come up here. Like, stay down there. Like, just stay there. Like, you come up here and you get gas and you could pick it up. You know what I mean?
True.
Like, just stay. Anyways, I have... The origination of this podcast came from COVID-19, and we're going to spend a decent chunk of tonight debating a few things that are very Iowa State sports related with COVID. And I have a few fresh thoughts, and I want to bounce them off of Brent, and I know he has some too. Working at the university like he does, he might have some different perspectives, so it'll be good. This week's Cyclone Fanatic super duper patron shout out goes out to Jason Roskilly. Okay. Roskilly. Jason Roskilly.
Great last name.
That is a great last name. He was born into an Iowa State family, kind of like you. Well, you were split.
Nah, it's combo.
You were split. Mine, man, I went down to my Uncle Dick's grave, saw it for the first time. Like, there's literally a giant tiger hawk.
I respect it.
Yeah.
I do.
But Jason has two parents who are an Iowa State grad. He claims he is, quote, firmly entrenched. From the start, that's Jason's got major marbles for using the firmly entrenched line, but
now,
I love it.
Now only Iowa State people can use that.
He's up in Northwest Iowa, and he and his wife come back for games a couple times a year. They always go down to the Big 12 tournament. That's become a tradition for them, as it has a lot of people. So this is really cool. He is a plant manager at Smithfield Foods. That means I'm always promoting Smithfield Foods with our partnership at Iowa Pork.
I just had some Smithfield pork chops tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
On the new Traeger.
On the new grill.
How did that work for you?
Oh, it's fantastic.
You loving it?
You know me. I am the world's worst cook. You know
this. The Traeger makes it easy.
Oh, but it's
everything's
like,
easy with the Traeger.
It is fantastic. Like, I can't screw that up. And it actually turned out really well. So
this is awesome. Stuff. Jason and his wife, they got married yesterday.
No way.
They got married yesterday, and Jason Roskilly is our featured patron tonight on the Williams and Bloom Quarantine Podcast. So congratulations to Jason and his wife. I didn't get his wife's name in this, but we appreciate Jason's support. And as a reminder, if you're interested, you guys can become premium subscribers. You can check out all the initiatives, including shout-outs like this, and we're always pumping you guys full of inside information on the Cyclone Fanatic Premium Board or the Cyclone Fanatic Patreon page. You can do either or. Make your decision. And we appreciate it. It's really helping us get through a tough time.
Yeah.
And we are going to come out better on the back end of this because of it.
What better way to celebrate your honeymoon than a Cyclone Fanatic shout-out?
Couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. All right. Weekend review here. I want to start with COVID because this
newsy week this week.
Yeah, it was. And it's so interesting to watch this thing develop like on a week by week basis. And I don't know about you, Bloom, but like I felt like 2 weeks ago, like, oh, we're going to have a season.
Yeah.
Like it's really turning the corner.
Yep.
Now I'm like watching all these news reports come out every day. Oh, there's five guys that have it at Ole Miss. There's so this one happens with Iowa State on Friday,
yep,
where some doctor basically
Story County Public Health somebody.
Yeah,
or other.
Yeah. He made a comment that Iowa State is largely responsible
for their outbreak.
And so here's my like is a common sense response to it.
Yeah.
Well, duh.
That's that was my first thought too.
But two, like, okay, so everything's opening back up. So you've got more people not social distancing. The one thing we know at this point that this virus doesn't like is social distancing. So we're not doing that as much. And we're testing like exponentially more. Of course the numbers are going to go up.
Right.
Like, why? We've got to quit. Man, I don't know. I just feel like it's very disingenuous to keep reporting just numbers. Like, can we start doing like percentages or whatever? And then the second point I have to make is I don't know what to do. Editorially, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Do I have to put a front page story up every time there's a student athlete or a coach or a member of the athletic department that gets COVID? Two, do I need to be following up on this? And three, should these athletic departments or schools, I'm wondering if they need to be more like, you know, like the governor is doing like daily, like
weekly update.
Yeah, I don't think we need daily, but like to me, like this is not sustainable.
No.
The way it's going right now. And if we're all going to be freaking out about, oh, three people got it, what the hell are we going to do in the middle of the season?
Yeah.
Sorry, well,
that's a lot. But and what do you do in the middle of the season? What do you do?
And this is where I do think it'll become political in nature.
Yeah. I mean, so let's say,
see it because I know like which of my followers a lot by the way they reply to me. You can generally tell.
Yeah.
And I'm already seeing it.
Let me throw a hypothetical out.
Okay.
Iowa State's going down to Fort Worth, Texas. The week of the TCU game, report comes out. Oh, TCU had two players test positive for COVID. Do you send your team down there to play them? Now, they obviously...
We're going to have a lot of canceled games.
You're going to have a lot of canceled games, or you're just... I don't know what you're going to do. So, we do have some precedent here of what other leagues have done. I think college sports are a little bit of a different animal. But professional leagues have been isolating test positive players for like a week, some 2 weeks. I think the NBA's protocol is 2 weeks. But what do you do? I mean, chances are, if there's two, then there could be possibilities for more. However, if you're testing every day, maybe you'll catch them. And I just think it gets into a really hectic situation of, are college football teams going to test every single day and then isolate all those who are positive? Because you're going to have situations like this where there are a couple here, a couple there. And you saw Houston, University of Houston's football team got brought back for workouts. They had eight symptomatic is what they called it. And they shut down the workouts. I mean, I think, what is the answer here? Because there's obviously some momentum to play these games, but if these numbers keep happening, and Chris, from the national trends, it's not like this thing is going away. It has flattened. It has plateaued. But it's not going to go away. I don't see it going away permanently in September. And so what do you do? I mean, I just think there has to be a consensus that this is what we do. We isolate these players, these student athletes for whatever, 10 days and go from there. And then you just kind of have to go with it, because if you have these news stories every time there is a case or two, you're never going to play a season.
And doesn't it become counterproductive too for the public? Like, I almost like, because COVID is serious, I'm not trying to downplay it, but
yeah, it is.
The human brain can only take so much news. I mean, it's a little bit like, yeah, we get a little political here. It's a little bit like the Trump presidency. Like, there's been so much chaos that stuff that would be a big deal 10 years ago isn't now, because our brains can't consume all of the news. Like, it's constant. So if there are 15 reports of these college football teams having COVID cases every day, the public kind of just, or will they freak out more to the point where we can't have a season?
I don't know. It's somewhere. It's one of the two options. But the other part
is there anywhere in between?
Well, and even from a larger university perspective, you can't report every single time there's a student that gets COVID on campus. It's impossible because it's going to happen, and it's going to happen probably quite often this fall with Iowa State, even with all the measures in place. And so what do you do? I mean, there is the, because there's companies fighting this battle right now, Chris, those specifically the, you know, some of the plants and the meat processing facilities in Iowa.
Yeah.
It's a question of who should tell the public. Is it up to the corporation to let everybody know, well, we have this outbreak at this plant, or do you allow, is it the county? Is it the state to release that info? Like, it's a big gray area. And if you're the Iowa State Elect Department, do you need to proactively say every time you get a positive case, oh, by the way, we got another one. Hey, we're over here. We got another one.
Is it athletics?
Like, I don't know if that helps.
Does it have to be an athletic department, or should it be a university?
Well, it's a fair point. And if it is a university, should they be doing that every time they get a... Because there's 30... Probably enrollment this year is going to be around 32,000. There's 32,000 students. The odds are you're going to have a lot of positives every day.
And I would think to... I almost think the university needs to... Like, mom's a cancer survivor. She probably shouldn't be coming to visit her sophomore daughter, who's an engineering major.
Yeah, I know. Right? And I think there's a public health component here too, rather than just, you know, a news perspective. So it's a weird gray area that all these schools have to figure out. And I honestly think this is the most complicated part of this. You're going to have positives. How do you handle it? And if you start postponing all these games, then you may not have a season, because I think there's going to be little, I don't know if there'll be major outbreaks, but there's going to be little blips here and there, and you're going to have to figure out a way to handle it, because you cannot put these players in a bubble. The NBA has created this bubble, which I think will work, and it'll work pretty well in Orlando.
Yeah.
Right? And the PGA Tour had a great weekend, watched a lot of golf this weekend, but they can pretty much bubble their players because there's a limited number. But the college student athletes are with these other students. There's no way you can just isolate them. It's impossible. So if there are these blips that happen, how do you handle it? And I think this is really complicated. I think you just, Chris, you either have to just, I'm at the point now where you're either going to have to just say, you know what, we're going to punt until there's a capable vaccine, which I don't necessarily think is the right plan, or you're just going to have to go with it and then isolate as best as you can when positive cases happen. And if that's the case, then you run into a whole other question with injury reports and what is HIPAA? Like, if
that's a fascinating aspect.
If star quarterback has the virus, HIPAA, like, you can't release that. But then again, there are entities that need to know this information for the good of.
And then you're going to have media, like, is he suspended, or does he have COVID?
Yep.
Does he have an ankle injury? And you know that coaches are horrible about transparency anyways.
Correct. And is it fair to the kid to say, hey, well, my middle linebacker has COVID? No.
Or, like, I think it's interesting to think about the rogue doctor scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you get a positive
test.
He's
got COVID, but he doesn't. He's not that symptomatic.
Yeah.
Let him play.
Well,
football is like we have the NASCAR race on here in my office as we record tonight. Those guys aren't going to give each other COVID. Now, even if one of them had it, I'm sure that NASCAR is testing and doing all that stuff. But you know, the 12 car is racing the 9 car right there. He's not going to transmit COVID to him. If the defensive tackle has COVID,
correct,
and he's going face-to-face and spitting all over the right guard every play, he's probably going to give him COVID. It's a really bad sport for that. Maybe, like, could you draw up a worst-case scenario? I mean, Like, we have sweating all over each other.
Well, we have seen it in basketball before they shut down.
Yeah.
That post-defenders got COVID from, like, it was the Detroit Pistons. Christian Wood got COVID from guarding Rudy Gobert or vice versa. I don't know, Chris. What is the answer? I mean, the other part of it is, just to be completely big picture, is the risk, we think, from all the studies, and again, it's still pretty early in this, anybody under really age 50 is not at a great risk of at least dying from this. But what we don't know is some of the long-lasting ramifications, and this has creeped into the baseball negotiations too. These players say, well, we know we probably won't die from this because we're all in good shape and we're younger. However, we don't know the long-lasting impacts on, let's say, your lungs or some of your respiratory stuff. So,
there are a few studies about like what it like the cells in your lungs. Or I was reading some stuff.
Yeah,
about
there's
it.
Stuff out there, but again, this is it's a novel virus, and so we really don't know. And so it's just there's enough unknowns that make it scary when we know more about the flu, right? Like, the flu's been around for X amount of years, and when somebody gets the flu, they miss a game, or nobody's concerned about it. But this we're more concerned about, and you have public reports about it in the media. So it's not going away by September, and so everyone's going to have to adjust of how they handle it. I don't know, man. Like,
I feel like this is like this COVID story is like the stock market. Like, where it just goes up and down, up and down.
It does.
Today, like,
I agree.
I feel like we're in a bear market right now on the COVID deal. And maybe literally on the stock market, too, based off the end of the week. But, like, I felt like we were really bullish the last couple weeks. And I think it flipped this week.
So what you're going to have as these players come back, you'll have these reports of, oh, X amount of this team had player positives. Now, that should dwindle when it's just them back on campus. But when all the students come, I mean, it's really...
Like, are the bars, like, what are the, like, what's campus town going to be like?
I mean...
On a Friday night.
Right. And so, just for
social distancing at SIPs. No grinding allowed. Get your hand off of her, young man. She might have COVID. Like, what are they going to do?
Two for specials, but keep your 6 feet.
Yeah, I mean, like... Can you imagine being really like strict up there at Patty's?
No.
Being like, hey, half capacity.
No.
Come on.
And so
these kids are going to be passing COVID all over the place.
But do athletic departments say, okay, football players, you can't go anywhere near other students? I don't know. I mean, maybe that's an answer
student
here. I don't
athletes.
Think that prevents it. Now, I will say Iowa State announced this week was news. They are going to start a week early.
Yes.
In the fall semester. And within that, there are measures being put in place to try and mitigate this thing as best as possible.
Why wasn't Iowa a part of that announcement?
I don't know.
Northern Iowa was. I figured that would be a Regent thing that would have to be all the public institutions.
I know that Iowa's spring semester is usually a week off. I don't know if that had something to do with it. But Iowa State's concern, like all, there's a lot of higher ed institutions doing this, where they're going a week early or 2 weeks early, and then when Thanksgiving break happens, they're done, so they don't bring it back for basically the last week or two. But the other thing Iowa State announced is some measures in place on campus. They didn't use the word require, but it was, I don't know exactly the terminology, but it was strongly advised that everybody on campus wear masks in the fall. Yep. Even in class.
They won't, but they should.
But again, if you're in class and you don't have one, I don't think you can say, hey, if you don't wear that, you'll fail the class. But I do think there's some peer pressure there to wear it. So
I hope so. It just makes sense.
I think you're trying to control the thing as much as possible. And quite honestly, there are student leadership that I've been involved a little bit with. They say, we'd rather do that, which is not ideal. Nobody wants to wear masks in class. I mean, that would be kind of a miserable thing. But it's better that than taking these online classes, which really ruin the experience of an on-campus education.
Real quick, before we get to the bourbon of the night and to some other topics, I just wanted to drop a quick line on the Iowa football program And I'll be going into more detail Monday.
You had a fun week on your
KXNO Fanatics
afternoon program.
Well, I didn't do the show. I took Friday off, and that was right after Kirk Ferentz's press conference. Let me just say this. I think that anybody who's, you know, full of hellfire and brimstone with this is, we don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to take the student athlete's word for it.
Yeah.
And none of these guys are calling for Kirk Ferentz to be fired. So I feel like it's a little extreme for me to come out and say it. I will say this. I think it's very disingenuous of Kirk Ferentz at this point to basically, after the Rabdo deal, he gives Chris Doyle this fake award, basically rubs it in everybody's face is how he did that. Makes him the highest paid strength coach in the country. And I think by results, he probably earned that. But, like, you can't just completely distance yourself from this guy.
No.
Like, I've been around enough coaches at this level. I've never seen a coach, and maybe Kirk Ferentz is different. I don't know. But I have never seen a coach at this level who has no clue what's going on in the weight room and all this stuff. And if that's the case, then I would challenge Kirk Ferentz and say, why are none of your players comfortable enough to talk to you about this? He's not catching enough on this, I don't think.
100%.
I don't think he should be fired. Again, there's 50 guys who have come out. Not one of them have said we think Coach Ferentz should go. So who the hell am I to say he should?
Correct.
But I watched that press conference on Friday, and I wish that I hadn't taken the day off because I wanted to go on the air so badly. But, man, like the way the Rabdo thing was handled, and I just can't get it out of my mind, like how closely tied Doyle and Ferentz are. And now, I didn't know how he acted in the weight room. I mean, I think it's very disingenuous.
Reminds me a little bit of the Kansas basketball deal with the recruiting
team. Yeah, we didn't know Adidas was talking to these guys.
Are you, what?
I mean, huh?
And listen,
Adidas, who's this guy? We wear Adidas uniforms and they pay us tens of millions of dollars, but we don't have a relationship with these guys.
And right now, just from afar, it appears the strategy has worked very well for their athletics communications and Ferentz, where it's basically we're shifting the blame to one person that at this point is expendable, in my opinion. That's Doyle, right? It's him. I don't think that guy's gonna survive this. I mean,
I think Brian Ferentz might have a tough time too.
I don't know though, but they've really. I give Kirk some credit, or whoever some credit. They've really done a good job, and whether it's because the media is afraid, especially locally, to really go after him, they've really kind of kept him insulated of this. Candidly, kind of bugged me this week is all these tweets start happening Monday.
Oh, the Iowa team's going to be so close.
Oh, and it's yeah. And I saw it from, it wasn't just one person. It was multiple members of the media. It's like, this team will be the most unified team in the Big Ten this year. And it's like,
you don't
this
know
coming
that.
Off 48 hours ago where there were literally complaints from people on the roster that this team was disunified because of race. It's like, how can you go to that hot take right now because of a couple tweets that they finally are allowed to tweet? And it's just like, sometimes in the media, and I'm sure we're all victim to it, you and me included, you want to find the good thing from it right away, like the redeeming story of it. And sometimes there's not a redeeming story. And so you don't have to create one 48 hours after this really transformational story happened. Sometimes let it go a little bit. And it's just like, we're so quick to maintain. And you even saw on the Hawkeye website, that it was like, I was going to set the precedent for college sports now because they're going to deal with this first. And it's like, well, not everybody has to deal with this.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can take credit for that, but it's PR and you spin the thing as much as you can, and we'll see what actually happens from it. But I thought they've done a good job of at least distancing Ferentz from this ordeal.
We need to know who is conducting this independent review.
Well, and then where is the athletic director and the president?
Nowhere. Barta is supposed to be talking to the media this week. So we'll see.
That part has kind of been unfair to the players and Ferentz too. It's like, although you guys figure it out.
That's unless it's by design.
Oh, and I'm sure it is. But if you remember,
actually, like as a guy, I like Gary Barta. But like, is honest question, trying to be respectful here. Is it your best? Do you remember the Gary Dolphin press conference right before
or the Rabdo thing where he disappeared for a while.
Is it the best PR to have Gary Barta talking?
Probably not. No, honestly. I agree with that. Yeah, no, it's not, because he would make things worse.
He would.
So, I mean, maybe give him credit for like
just hey, stay Gary, away. we're gonna have this stuff written up for you.
It's also humorous that that's the best way to go. And same with the president. Like, this is a more than likely an institutional issue. And my problem is, I'm seeing this in cardinal and gold colored glasses for sure. Like, I get my perspective to the table here. Is they were really quick during Bandgate to throw stones at Iowa State's procedures and infrastructure and follow through from the president and the AD. But when it happens to them and it's aimed at them, somehow they need to do an investigation first to come to with any facts. And that's what bugs me a lot about this is the, I don't want to call it hypocritical, but it's just two different ways to view a story if it benefits you.
It's well said. Again, we're not going to take too much time, but we'll talk more about that coming up on KXNO at 4 o'clock on Monday. Also have a former Iowa State staffer. He's now the head coach at Roosevelt, Mitch Moore.
I thought a good guy
to talk a lot about this race stuff. Yeah. He works with a lot of young African-Americans and has played ball at a high level. So he's going to join us as well at 4 o'clock on Monday.
I like
Monday.
Mitch a lot.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Welcome back. Williams & Bloom Pod here on your Sunday, June 14th. June 15th, if you're listening on Monday. The drink of choice tonight, we'd like to tell you guys what we're sipping on. So I was down in Clarinda. I went through the legendary Ding's Honk and Holler drive-through liquor store down on 16th Street. And oftentimes I like to, if there's a, I don't want to give away my tricks of the trade.
No, I don't think it's going down to
no, but
Dings.
When I'm in like these small towns, because I love small towns, I love like just investigating them and like stopping in and having a beer.
Seeing the locals.
Love it. Just talking with people. If you go to these small town liquor stores, you can oftentimes find gems that like just, you know, like one time down at Ding's Honk and Holler, I found a bottle of Blanton's for $50.
Yo.
And it was just like, for real? Because down there, like, people are very simple. Like I mean, there's people down there who would enjoy some Blantons,
yep.
But not like, I mean, if that was the case at Hy-Vee and Ankeny, never hit the shelf because the guy who's the manager would buy it up.
Right.
So anyways, I went in there and did that. I stocked up on some of that Templeton maple cause it's not being made anymore.
Very nice.
But then I had never seen this. And I ran it by a whiskey buddy of mine either, and he had neither. I'm sure that you could find this at like Hy-Vee, but it's always slipped past me. But I bought it, and I'm really enjoying it. It's a Jim Beam double oaked, twice barreled. It's really good.
It is very smooth.
Yeah. I like the one of my favorite whiskeys ever is the double oaked Woodford Reserve. I love it. I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal. This is really, really easy.
For the price point, too.
$27.95 at Ding's Honk and Holler in Clarinda.
I mean, this is pretty good.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's what we're sipping on tonight.
Yeah. I give it an 8.5 out of 10.
The Meguiar Sosa 30 for 30 Bloom. I know you're fired up about this one.
Yeah.
That's going on right now. You put out a tweet earlier today, though. You know, it is funny, Brent, about how certain things in life will just take you back.
Yep.
Like, there's certain, like, games that you can remember.
Oh, yeah.
You can remember what you had for breakfast that morning. I would imagine a young Brent Bloom in 1998 was just locked into Cardinals baseball every season.
Oh, it was. So, I just put on Twitter that this was the height of my baseball love. And really, sports. I mean, there's something about, you know, early teenage, just starting high school, where you are so invested in sports. And, you know, the Meguiar Sosa thing just was it for me. And I was a Cardinals fan, and the Cardinals had acquired Meguiar in 97. And, you know, he was must watch. And, Chris, honestly, this is part of my reason I pursued broadcasting was that summer too. So not only, so my idol growing up is Pete Taylor. Because like we've talked about before on Cyclone Fanatic, Iowa State games weren't on TV very often, specifically football. And so to listen, you had to listen to the radio. Well, even 98, the Cardinals had some games. I don't know if I had the right package or whatnot, but I listened to a lot of your boy Mike Shannon and Jack Buck call Cardinals games. And so I followed that summer vividly, and then Sosa kind of came out of nowhere at the time, and it was back and forth. And I was just thinking about this today. I was texting with my dad and brothers. We went to Minnesota. Interleague play was fairly new. I think it was in year 3 or 4 at that time in 1998. We went to the Metrodome and saw, I looked it up today. It's kind of fun to look at Baseball Reference. We saw McGuire's 36th home run that year.
Nice.
In Minneapolis.
That's cool.
But it was just fun to think. And I just, before I came over here, I looked up, you can YouTube it. It's kind of hilarious. You can see all of the compilation of McGuire's 70 home runs that year.
Yeah.
And what a...
They're just bombs.
And he was just...
You just tell the second they hit the bat.
He was so hopped up on something, right? Like that he was not a normal-looking human being, but we didn't care at the time.
No.
And there was something to that where you just didn't care. It was like the age of innocence where you knew probably something weird was happening here. I mean, here's this gigantic... He's probably 265 pounds. And he's just hitting bomb dinger after dinger. And yeah, you didn't care because it was great.
The best, like, not even Sosa, McGuire, but like the guys like Brady Anderson hitting 50. Right. Luis Gonzalez cracked like 60 that one year. The funny thing about McGuire that I remember this specifically watching Baseball Tonight when he got traded there.
Yeah.
I remember that.
From like, the A's. Yeah, same.
I remember exactly where I was sitting in my parents' house. I'm like, what? They just traded McGuire?
So Baseball Tonight and then all the sports centers, right?
Yeah.
Or like you would tune in, did McGuire hit one tonight?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or did Sosa hit one tonight?
It was a nightly thing. And then we had, you know, Bonds come up on it a few years later.
5 years later.
Yeah. But man, what a, and then that home run derby between those two guys, which was just, I mean, it was like watching two robots out there.
And you looking back, I mean, there were so many telltale signs that something wasn't quite right here, but at the time you didn't care. And now, I mean, fast forward 22 years, 98 really rescued baseball from the strike shortened season.
Which brings us to today.
And you're in a bad spot for baseball.
Yeah.
You know, 98, We joked about it, right? I wanted to write a paper in college about the steroid thing where someone like me would take steroids and see what would actually happen. Clearly, something wasn't right there, but they almost, in a weird way, baseball needed that to kind of get back into the public eye. Obviously, it soured in the end, but I think long-term, it actually could have been... Yeah, so that's a deeper conversation. But now, baseball's in a tough spot where... They had a potential great opportunity to capture some of the stuff they've lost in recent years, and they've completely they've blown it all. I mean, this has been a miserable 2 months for baseball, and I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't think it matters which side you're on either. No. Like, it's just an abomination for the entire sport.
It's sad. It really is sad. And watching that today, I'm like, man.
People can deal with, like, oh, with COVID, like, people can deal with that because it's, I mean, it's impacted all of our lives, so we can relate to it as humans. It's hard to tell an economy with 20% unemployment.
Yes.
That's going to keep getting worse. I mean, we're in a recession. We're not headed into it. We're in a recession. Some people still think we could get into a depression. I don't. I think that the feds will keep throwing money into the whatever. That's a whole other deal. But it's very difficult to reason with a fan base that is in peril, like normal folks are in this country, when you start talking about labor and you start using the pandemic to millionaires versus billionaires. It's very difficult for people like in our chairs. We're middle class guys. Think about the lower class guy. I had a guy, God bless him. He was great. Grubhub driver a couple weeks ago who I had a Braves hat on. And he had his Philly shirt on.
Yeah.
And he badmouthed my hat. But then he told me, Like, it was very touching. He's like, I'm out here driving Grubhub because I got laid off and I'm trying to put food on the table for my family. And these sons of bitches, like, he was mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, I don't even know if I'll root for the Phillies when they come back. And that's the problem. Again, the COVID thing, like, even the NBA deal, if for some reason that thing would blow up, and if it's because of COVID, people will figure it out, and I think they'll be okay with it. But if you start doing the financial thing with it, where you're trying to capitalize on this thing, man, that's tough to stomach.
Agreed. And my problem is I think we have an issue just culturally where there's always this weird feeling out there, and maybe justified, maybe not, that someone's trying to F you over, right? And I think this is where baseball and the players kind of got into it, where like they assumed, and again, maybe correctly, the other side was really trying to jerk them around. And so what you end up is you have these 2 months of negotiations where you don't go anywhere, and yet you're missing, what's the phrase? You're missing the forest because you're looking at a tree or through the trees. And not only is this going to hurt them for this year, which but now you're missing an opportunity for 21, 22, 23, when you really could have built up some love from people who missed it. Like, I think, and I'm one of the good example here, I've watched more NASCAR in the last 4 weeks than I have in the last 15 years. And I'm like, you know what? I don't mind this. And I watched 20 hours of golf this weekend. I mean, but like, I don't have anything else to do. And I'm like, I enjoyed it. But if they're going to miss out on all this stuff, then they're going to end up burnt in the long run. And when you get to a negotiation in 2021, when the contract is up between the players and baseball, you're going to be short-sighted because there's not going to be the TV money there to renegotiate. And I just think it's so much. They're arguing over pennies when tens of dollars are on the line. And I don't get it. I mean, I understand. You don't want to be screwed over. Like, nobody wants that, but
here's the one that
it's just messed up.
Maybe you can give me some extra perspective on. I think it's one of the most fascinating negotiations I've seen in my life, and it's Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. Because with the NFL, we don't really know what's going to happen to their salary cap.
Yeah,
because of COVID, it's different than baseball.
Yeah,
we don't know what's going to happen to the salary cap because of COVID. So Dak's wanting like $40 million. Like, $40 million is a lot. Dak's, I mean, depending on who you talk to, in my opinion, not worth $40 million.
I'd be at camp.
But let's say you pay him $40 million now, and then the cap drops because of COVID, and they're making less because of, you know,
lack of fans, potentially. Yeah.
I mean, that could be like paying Dak Prescott like $60 million in a couple years.
I
don't blame the Cowboys. Like, it's fascinating though that like we're in this spot where you're having to think about stuff like that, right? Have you ever seen anything? Am I missing something there? I was trying to explain this to my dad last night because he's a big Cowboys fan, and he didn't really know where he landed.
Well, nobody really wants to commit because they don't know what the future looks like.
Yeah, but like if you're Dak, I see why you're like, well, I got to make my money now because if this cap drops, like they're never going to sign me for what I want.
If I was Dak, I would sign.
Get the 35 and take it.
Just go.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen? Although, I don't know. We've talked about on this podcast, where do media rights go from here? You know, maybe if, and you follow the markets, Amazon has not been affected by this at all. Apple's done okay. Google's done okay. If they start getting into the media rights biz, maybe these contracts won't get any smaller. And then you can have these contracts that keep going up exponentially. But specifically baseball, I think you just got to come up with something here. And what's going to happen is they're going to play this 50-some game schedule mandated by the commissioner, and this is going to be a hanging cloud over there all of 2021, too. And it's just a mess. They had a golden opportunity. They're outdoors. It's the game of summer with all these people wanting some form of entertainment, and they literally, they're squibbling and squabbling over pennies on the dollar. And it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, and it's just, again, it's so hard for people to relate to. The problem is, like, I think both sides, like, if I put myself in their side, I could totally see where they're going from.
Yes.
But they're cannibalizing their sport by the day.
They don't want to be screwed over, but they are. But in the long run, it's going to hurt them. Now,
it'll hurt the players more, I think. I mean, the owners
are the owners. And that's what the players see, though, is they see these rich guys. They can weather this. We can't. But it's like, well.
I get it. But the players, there has to be some animosity within the players' union, because it's like, well, what about the guy who is like the guy who's right between like the big leagues and AAA, and he's constantly moving back and forth? Like, oh, yeah, it's easy for Bryce Harper and Max Scherzer to run their mouth.
Correct.
Like, they're fine, you know? Yeah. But, like, what about me?
Well, and the other issue is this is going to have a major impact for you know, as far as we know, for minor league baseball, too.
Yeah.
I mean, most of these minor league teams, I wouldn't say most, but there's a portion of them that won't come back.
I'll continue to support the Iowa Cubs because I know a lot of those guys, and it'll be hard to get me into a big league ballpark here in the next few years. I got too much of my old man in me. He said after 94, he'd never go back to a game. Now, it took the Royals, his longtime favorite team, to be in championship contention.
Sure. And I remember that.
Finally sucked him back in.
He had the blue shirts on.
Him and Mom went to a lot of games then, and they have been since. They became Royal. They watched every game.
But think about that was 20 years later, right?
Yeah.
So.
And we used to, when I was a kid, we'd go to games all the time, even when the Royals were terrible. But we'd go to watch George Brett and Bo Jackson. And, you know, like I remember specifically one game, they took me there because we wanted to watch the Mariners. And I watched Ken Griffey, Edgar Martinez, and Jay Buhner go back to back to back.
There you go.
Like, I mean, you have those great memories, right? But I mean, I'm not like, I'd rather take my daughters to a NASCAR race than go down. I love going to Kansas City. Like, that's really the only ballpark that I have.
It's a great ballpark.
I'm a Braves fan, but like to get on a plane and go to Atlanta to go to an MLB game. I've been to St. Louis, which I like. It's just such a trek down there. I need to go up to Target Field.
You would love it.
Yeah.
It's that
Target is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
that's
great.
The one I kind of like
it's
to
really
check
good.
Off the list.
You would enjoy that. But you're right. I mean, they're just missing, I think, the big picture, and I'm sure other people have pointed this out to them, but they're driving themselves off a cliff, and now you're going to run up against NBA probably, although they have their own issues the last couple of days, NHL for sure, and then, you know, MLS got their stuff together quickly.
I think we're in for a I told my wife today, you know, we're part of this COVID pod, the origination of it again, talking about just how it's been difficult on normal families. Well, we still don't have daycare.
Yeah.
And I told Ashley, I said, listen, I'm going to continue to do everything I can. I've been the primary caregiver for our, cause she's been wild busy.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do it all. I was like, when August hits, you're going to have NBA, NHL playoffs, hopefully MLB, NASCAR, you're going to have college football ramping up,
PGA
NFL
Tour
preseason,
majors,
PGA Tour majors, Kentucky
All the
Derby
horse
coming
racing,
up.
Yep.
Like, I'm not going to be able to watch these kids for Cyclone Fanatic major sales season.
Ew. I mean, from a fan standpoint, it's great.
This wasn't a woe is me deal.
No.
My point is, the consumer's going to have to make a decision, too.
Correct.
And I think it'll be really interesting to see, like, what the Western Conference Finals in an empty gym is drawing against the NFL.
Same. And then if you're baseball, do you fit in that?
Baseball is screwed at this point. Like, they've missed their opportunity. Their opportunity was what NASCAR's been doing the last month with Wednesday night races.
Correct.
And watching a primetime race here on a Sunday.
Correct.
They're having, like, record TV ratings.
Now, when they come back, it'll probably be mid-July, late July, and you're going up with the NBA playoffs. Good luck.
In empty stadium. Spring training facilities, basically.
Yeah.
Which I think
it'll be their home stadiums, but it'll look like there's nobody there.
Oh, they are going to be in the home stadiums. Yeah. They're not going to do that because they freaked out.
But
about
it's
it.
Just like, and an asterisk season to begin with because it's less than a third of the games. Because they were quibbling over, you know, it's a couple $100 million what it turns out to be. But for them, that's, you know, pretty small potatoes. Disappointing.
Can I tell my quick, funny Tony La Russa stories on the 30 for 30 real quick? Because I'm sure he's going to be brought up in that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Tony, he would have been year three or four at that point.
So it was when I was down at Cardinals spring training. I have two good Tony La Russa stories. Our old boss at KMA Radio, Don Hansen, gave me a tip before I went down there.
That was pretty crazy that, by the way, this is why KMA Radio in Shenandoah is the best. They let you in Shenandoah go cover
spring training.
Spring training in both.
Yeah. Surprise, Arizona and West Palm Beach.
Right.
Oh, Jupiter.
Right.
Yeah. Multiple years.
And I'm not quite sure why, but they did. And you went.
We sold it.
Man, good times. I didn't appreciate that when we were down there as much as I should have.
So anyways.
Tony. Kind of Don a curmudgeon,
Hansen,
right?
Don Hansen taught me. How old was I? What,
23?
Yeah, 23. Don Hansen tells me, you know, this is great advice for anybody. And I give this advice to interns and stuff all the time. If you act like you belong somewhere, you'll be fine.
Yep.
Don't walk around
very true.
On eggshells. Like, you know,
people
have some
can
confidence.
Spot that. Yep.
Puff your chest out, you know, stand tall and be a man or be a woman, you know, and, you know, act like you belong there and learn the ropes from the guys and gals who know what they're doing. So I did that, and it worked well for me with the Royals. Trey Hillman was awesome. Man, I had some great, they would have been podcasts back then. I had Billy Butler, Luke Hochaver.
Yeah, they were young. Yeah.
Alex Luke Gordon Hochaver, was awesome. Yeah. Yep. Like, I did a whole deal with...
Because was I there? I was the one who was reporting. Yeah, I was.
You were like editing all these
I was
things.
Editing all your stuff back in Shan. Yeah. That's right.
It worked out great with the Royals. Like, they were awesome. And they liked the fact that a young guy was in the locker room and, you know.
Good memories,
It was awesome. I still have a disc with all those interviews. I would just cringe if I went back and heard them.
Luke Hochaver.
So I go to the Cardinals and I'm like, okay, this is, I'm going to do it just like I did the Royals. The Cardinals are vastly different than the Royals. It's like, you know, like if you cover Iowa State football in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And then you go to like Alabama.
Yeah.
The
difference. A little more.
And I don't mean that like Iowa State wasn't big time because it was still in the Big 12, but like
there's no coverage.
They're friendly to media because they want the coverage, where Alabama doesn't give a crap who you are or what you're doing. So I walk up and my first day there, I ask Tony La Russa some question about like his struggling bullpen. And he looks at me stone cold and goes, "Who the hell are you?" Chris Williams,
KMA
Radio in Shenandoah.
Didn't you interview Wainwright after his big contract?
Yeah, and Wainwright gets his deal, and he made fun of me because of the way I was holding my microphone in the middle of the interview. And then it's one of those sports moments I'll never forget. Drake had just lost to Western Kentucky when Drake was a five seed.
Yeah, down in Tampa, which was not near Jupiter, but...
La Russa and Bob Knight are like best friends.
That's true.
So La Russa wouldn't meet with the media in like his normal place. We had to go to his office for like Tony to like allow us in because he's like a god, you know. So here, you know, here I am just stumbling in behind these guys. Cause at this point, Tony La Russa has completely sucked every ounce of confidence I have out of me.
Right.
This is like 4 days in.
I'm done.
La Russa has broken me.
Which he was good at.
Yeah.
Including the players.
And I'm like just limping into his office.
Yeah. Oh, Tony.
La Russa made us stand there for like 25 minutes. Just watching him watch the Texas Tech NCAA tournament game.
Oh, man.
And, like, he's sitting there reacting to every shot. It was the most awkward thing I've ever been a part of. And he knows we're there.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not making any small talk.
It's a power thing.
Yeah. He's like, hey, losers.
You will wait for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was the most awkward thing I'd ever been a part of.
Big power thing right there.
Oh.
That's a big ego thing. I've dealt with that before.
Well, in the NBA.
You will wait for me.
I can't even.
Oh, my gosh.
Some of the NBA stories you have to have.
Bad. Well,
didn't you have a run-in with Patrick Ewing once?
I did. No, Pat was great.
Oh, he was with
great.
The he was
he
with
was
the Magic.
Assistant coach at the time. Okay, he was great.
Who was the one that you had the run in with?
Multiple. Rondo, I had a run in with.
I could see that.
Yeah.
There was. There's a legendary one.
Rasheed Wallace was bad. I had a run in with him. No, but with Dwight. So I covered Dwight on a daily basis, and he was literally the world's largest 10-year-old. That's what he was. So he had a game once. So this is right to your La Russa story. How long will the media wait for me to take my shower was Dwight's game.
Yeah.
And so he would, in his post game, he would take 2-hour-long showers just to try and do the rain delay so the media would eventually leave, just to be a jerk. That's really all of it. It was like an ego power. I mean, he was 23 at the time. Yeah. Like, I get it. Like, he was trying.
He didn't have, like, kids to get home to.
No, so he was like, I'm going to be in here as long as I can to avoid you guys. And so some of us would wait, and eventually we'd just give up.
But you were there when they were good.
Yeah, they made the finals.
Yeah, I remember.
One of the years I was there. But, I mean, he was a big 10-year-old. And, again, we got along fine. I mean, but he was. Some of the stuff that's come out about him afterwards, I was
you're always like, oh.
That's what he was. He was very good. Dwight Howard is underappreciated as a player. I mean, he had a good 5-year stretch there, but
what happened to him? Did he just break down?
I think the back went. He had the flare up with Van Gundy. Remember where he went to the Lakers and it was a bad deal, and then he just got put in a couple bad spots. And when you're a physical player like he was, that loses some of that that bounce, you become pretty ordinary. And the league changed. Yeah. And now you're a classic post-up big guy that can't make a jump shot or a free throw. And what are you there for? You're there to rebound and dunk.
What year did you guys go to the finals? Was it 10?
So it's funny you say that. 11 years ago today is when Kobe's Lakers beat the Magic in Game 5 of the finals.
Okay.
So 2009.
So if I would have told you in 2009 that Dwight's, if I would have asked you, like, what's Dwight's legacy going to be, what would you have said?
I would have thought he would be a top 5 big guy of all time, maybe top 15 player.
Me
and
too.
He was
good.
Great from 07 to 12, 13, and then he got hurt, and it just hasn't been the same.
Yeah.
He was having a nice little resurgence this year, but I still think he's a Hall of Famer just because he was the best big guy for a good 5-year stretch there. But
who could have known at that time that the league would change so much?
Well, and what's interesting,
he'd never be a top pick now.
No, I mean, just a physical freak, but couldn't shoot, still can't shoot. And it's interesting that our Magic team really revolutionized the big guy shooting threes phenomenon. So they had Hito Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis. And so what they did, it was really smart at the time. They had Dwight in the middle who would just disrupt everything, and they had 4 shooters around him, and that's somewhat of what basketball merged into, but now it's really 5 shooters on the floor at all times. So, it was fun. I mean, it's fun to think about. I mean, they got owned by Kobe, and I saw Kobe put up 40-plus in Staples Center in Game 1 that year.
That's awesome, though. What a great memory to be able to tell your boys and
but just think about
all that stuff.
The year 2020, Kobe happened in January, right? Like,
it's been
unreal. What a year.
I mean, you could documentaries have been such a big thing this year. You could do like a 10-part on 20, but think of I'm beyond sports with the Black Lives Matter movement. And then I think that we're going to have a really fascinating part back to the COVID thing. Like, how much are these protests spreading the virus?
Right.
Because now the virus is taking a backseat to the racial injustice story. And, you know, probably rightfully so, considering it carried on again in Atlanta this week.
Yep.
But is it rightfully so in the sense that, hundreds of people are dying every day from this virus? And, it's fascinating.
But
then I would say, black people have been suppressed for 400 years. So, they're, but, how much is that impacting the virus? Kobe dies. We don't have any of these sports. Get the baseball blunder that could impact MLB forever.
Yeah.
There's so much.
There's a lot. And then the backdrop, of course, is the 2020 election.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
So, yeah, that happens. But, man, I honestly appreciate everybody listening. I really do. Because this has been therapeutic in a way just to get some thoughts out about what's happening. So I
agree.
And it's great that people listen, because it's honestly, we wouldn't be here without you guys, but it's been great for I remember the first week we've done this, it was kind of taboo to like be around another person that wasn't your family.
Little nervous.
It's like, what do we do? Like, is this frowned upon? And now it's, yeah, but it's just been nice to kind of document some of our thoughts along the way.
I got the nicest email, and I'm not going to say his name yet because I want to check. I haven't got a chance to write the gentleman back. But I'd like to read it next week. Guy who is a Democratic socialist.
Okay.
And he listens to the show every week. He's one of our Patreon members. And he wrote me the nicest email about how, which makes sense because I believe I'm very moderate. I'm sure other people have different opinions, but
I've heard from a few that think you're not.
Yeah, whatever. Well, it's funny though, because in the age of Trump, like it's like, what do you have to do to be a conservatism is not what it used to be, right? Like the GOP has gone so far right that like being a moderate now, like
portions of it.
Yeah. Well, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
When none of Congress will stand up to the man, that it just becomes very, that's what you represent to me. Prove me wrong. But this guy, he says in this email, he's like, oh my God, Williams, I listen to you every day. And I want to scream at my microphone half the time, but damn it, I followed you for 10 years and I know you have great values and I know where you come from and I appreciate that. It's just like, why can't more of us be like that? Like this guy, I mean, I ain't no socialist. I can promise you that. You can think, and I am farther left. Trump has moved me farther left, I think, for a lot of reasons. Did you listen to my podcast with my pastor, by the way?
I haven't yet, sorry.
So I would encourage anybody to do that. The Chris Williams podcast, you can search for it. I did a podcast with my pastor this last week, and it was one of the more enlightening pieces I've ever done. So you
guys
should check
that. I saw some pretty good reviews on the
I thought it was awesome. But anyways, Brent, we had a listener who sent that, and I don't want to just read his email without asking for permission.
Yeah.
But it was really cool. I mean, you talked about thanking people. We love feedback like that. And we hope that, and that was this guy's point, Brent, is that he's just like, I don't always agree with you guys, but at the end of the day, I know where you're coming from. And like, I can respect that. And that's what it's all about. Even if we don't agree with you on everything, like, let's just be like legit humans. And
with you, more for that, one way or another.
All right, I want to end this thing because I want to watch the end of this NASCAR race.
It's getting heated up.
60 to go. Chase Elliott's in second, baby.
He's having a nice little run here from my uneducated NASCAR fandom here.
He's on fire right now. He just doesn't win a lot. We got to get to victory lane a few more times. He's a good top five driver. Anyways, we will be back next week. It'll be on Father's Day. We'll be recording.
Oh my gosh!
Double trouble for both of us.
This is I mentioned the McGuire thing. McGuire on June 14th in 1998 had 28 home runs. I mean, think about how much baseball season we've missed from that standpoint. Figure it out.
No doubt, bro.
Figure it out.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Appreciate y'all.
Appreciate you guys. Take care.